This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, July the 24th. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. The extracts we'll be reading for you from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Gordon and Liz Legg. Before we begin, a couple of regular notices for you. If you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01 962 870 370. That's 01 962 870 370. And just a reminder here that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back from any of the tracks if you want to listen again. If you know anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, Irene will help you with that also. Just give her a call and she'll make the necessary arrangements. Her number again is 01962 870 370. And here's another reminder for those of you with computers or tablets. As well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. That's Winchester Talking News, all lowercase, no spaces. You just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And so, on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Your readers this week are Claire Porter.
Hello.
And this week we're pleased to welcome Richard Martin, who's Hello. Very kindly standing in for Robin. Hello, Richard. And Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter. The main headlines. They are this week, mother admits killing, anger over bill for consultants, Silver Hill, yes. And so the first story head, please, Jerry.
Mother admits killing. A mentally ill mother has pleaded guilty to killing her son after she set their car alight in a country lane near Winchester. Teresa Sheldon was given a hospital order after admitting the manslaughter of Tommy Sheldon, 5. Tommy died 2 weeks after she spread petrol inside their car, igniting it with a lighter while he sat in his child seat. Health professionals told Winchester Crown Court on Tuesday that the 38-year-old of Kathleen Road Scholing had suffered psychotic symptoms when she drove to Hursley last August the 11th. She sobbed as she denied her son's murder, but pleaded guilty to manslaughter on grounds of diminished responsibility. The judge, Mr. Justice Dingemans, agreed prison would not be in the best interests of her recurrent mental disorder, and he sentenced her under the Mental Health Act. He thanked her family for the dignified way they acted in court, and thanked Alan and William Busemans, the father and son passers-by, who tried to save Tommy from the flames. The court heard how Sheldon drove to Sainsbury's in Badger Farm to fill up a newly purchased petrol can. She parked her Ford Fiesta in Merdon Castle Lane between 7:45 and 8:05 p.m., then climbed into the back seat with Tommy and another child, who cannot be named for legal reasons. Sheldon splashed petrol all over the seats before sparking it with a lighter. The Busemans, who were on their way to a fishing trip, saw the car up in flames, with Sheldon screaming, having got out of the car, her legs partially on fire, before noticing Tommy was still inside. The court was told they had difficulty getting him out because of the child lock. Prosecutor Kerry Malin said, Mr. Busemans opened the car and Tommy fell and hit his head before he could catch him. She said paramedics who treated him at the scene described his clothing as smoky, the burns having covered 65% of his body, before asking Tommy to confirm his name. They said Sheldon stood there screaming. The other child had escaped the vehicle. Miss Malin added, they could not initially determine his ethnicity due to the extent of the burns. It was only by seeing a small patch of skin they realised he was Caucasian. Tommy was taken to Southampton General Hospital by air ambulance before transfer to a specialist burns unit in Bristol. Sheldon was also treated for injuries, which resulted in 3 skin grafts. She also pleaded not guilty to 1 account of attempted murder and 1 count of arson, being reckless as to whether life was endangered. Tommy died on August the 25th at 9:20 a.m. from bronchopneumonia, the court heard. Mitigating, Nigel Lickley, QC, described Sheldon as an otherwise good, devoted mother, but he said doctors' reports indicated she may need lifelong treatment for her mental illness. Detective Inspector Simon Baker said after the hearing, this was a truly harrowing case for all involved, and our thoughts remain with the family and friends of all those who've been affected by this distressing incident. This was a long and complex investigation, which involved months of sensitive inquiries to enable us to bring the case to court in extremely tragic circumstances. I would like to commend the bravery and courage of those members of the public and the emergency services who intervened to try and rescue Teresa and the children from the burning car.
Anger over bill for consultants. Hampshire County Council has created its own consultancy team, despite splashing out millions of pounds on external management consultants. Permanent jobs on offer include 2 £59,000 a year principal consultants, 3 £44,000 senior consultants, and 2 £37,000 consultants. A job advertisement called them, quotes, transformation team consultants, close quotes. Based at the council's Winchester HQ, it stated their role is to drive key transformational programmes and projects across the organisation. The aim is to reform services and cut costs to cope with reduced government funding. As revealed in April, the council is spending millions on external consultants while cutting frontline services including buses, libraries and care for the elderly. The biggest slice, up to £18 million, was handed to Deloitte, an international consultancy firm and the council's private sector partner to support transformational change 2013-15. Under transparency rules, the council is obliged to publish spending over £500 and value of contracts. An analysis shows more than £3 million was paid to Deloitte between December 2014 and June 2015 for core support, workforce development and cost reduction. This works out at about £27,500 for every weekday. The council says it is more efficient and cost-effective than recruiting permanent staff and making posts redundant. But now, it has emerged, the council has also appointed a consultancy team to work with Deloitte. A spokesman declined to say how many consultants it employed, but said their role was to manage specific programmes and it was anticipated costs will be completely dwarfed by savings generated. The internal consultants report to Head of Transformation Michael Lee, appointed in July 2014. As a deputy chief officer, his pay is believed to be between £73,000 and £110,000. Spending taxpayers' money on internal and external consultants has angered anti-council tax campaigners, Unison and opposition councillors. Christine Melsom of Is It Fair Anti-Council Tax Group said, why do they need both? If Hampshire County Council is employing its own management consultants, why does it also need Deloitte? Hampshire Unison branch secretary Dave Anderson said it was an entirely ludicrous situation. At full council last Thursday, Tory council leader Roy Perry was asked by Labour's Chris Connor how much Deloitte was paid, but didn't say. Instead, Councillor Perry promised to send counsellor the information, but said paid advisers helped slice £300 million from the budget, and Hampshire had the second lowest council tax of any county in England. After the meeting, Lib Dem opposition leader, Councillor Keith Howe, said, explaining this was about achieving low council tax failed to explain how spending many millions of pounds of public money on external consultants and now a new internal consultancy team could protect services that are being cut ruthlessly. The council is looking for further savings of £98 million in 2015-16.
Silver Hill, yes. Civic chiefs have overwhelmingly backed the Silver Hill scheme in a decision which puts the multi-million pound development on the brink of going ahead. The City Council agreed that the firm behind the regeneration, TH Real Estate, has met its contractual duties and the project can go unconditional. But rebel City Councillor Kim Gottlieb has threatened legal action to prevent what he called a disaster for Winchester. Minor changes to design are likely, Council heard, but Councillor Gottlieb claims that the Guildhall and TH Real Estate are working to bring back controversial changes like removing the bus station. That revised scheme, approved last year but squashed by the High Court, will not be taken out of council hands by the government, ministers confirmed last Friday. In a letter to the Chronicle, Councillor Gottlieb says of the government decision, it will perplex the council as, although the judicial review will prevent them allowing Henderson, i.e. TH Real Estate, to revert back to the 2014 scheme, both parties will no doubt be working out how they can inch their way back into it. In this context, the bus station, the affordable housing, and pretty much everything will be up for grabs, the sole driver being Henderson's best interests, because by then the council will have effectively lost all control. TH Real Estate Development Director Martin Perry declined to comment, but a council spokesman said, it is the 2009 scheme that is progressing and which is set to go unconditional. That is the focus of our attention. Councillors approved the project at last week's meeting, which ran into the early hours of Thursday. Terminating the contract would lead to costly legal battles with the developer, Councillor leader Stephen Godfrey told colleagues. He added that the developer and council are pursuing design tweaks, such as swapping timber for flint. Liberal Democrat Councillor Martin Todd said, if we terminate, we are going to be in court, and we are likely to be in court with the potential of losing a very serious amount of money for a considerable period of time. We've seen pictures of alternative schemes that supposedly tell us that there are some fantasy world around the corner, and I don't see how it's going to happen. We don't know what we're getting, and there are genuine, real reasons, hard, concrete reasons, why it would be significantly worse than what we have now. Councillor Gottlieb has threatened to seek injunctions against future use of compulsory purchase orders, and the council's approval of TH Real Estate's evidence that the scheme is financially viable. He said, until it's built, it ain't built, and we will carry on trying to prevent what will be a complete disaster for Winchester, even though my colleagues don't see it as a disaster.
Thank you all for that. And we're going to move on now to the death announcements, and I will start with reading Bone, Michael Frederick Bone, after a short illness, aged 72 years, on the 14th of July.
Curtis, Glenn Curtis, of Lanivet, Cornwall, and previously of Winchester, on 13th July.
Doran, Alisa Louise Doran, on the 5th of July 2015, aged 90.
Kent, Ronald Snowy Kent, in hospital on 14th of July, aged 91.
Kingdon, Gerald Ian Kingdon, a prominent Winchester businessman, owner of T.M. Kingdon & Sons, aged 82.
Payne, Violet Joan Payne, peacefully on 15th July.
Pick, Leslie Raymond Pick, on the 9th of July, aged 70.
Towers, Brian Towers, peacefully, aged 88, on 14th of July.
Upchurch, Ava Maureen Moe, Upchurch, in hospital on the 11th of July.
Walker, William Bill Walker, aged 80, in Chandlersford Nursing Home on 13th July.
Way, June Way, peacefully at Abbeygate Care Home on the 17th of July.
And we're going to move on now to Christian comment, and Reverend Graham Bowkett is the contributor this week. Claire, please.
And he has headed this, Worship of God is an Inoculation. When I worked in York Diocese, the Archbishop of York was very fond of telling us that if we had nothing to say, then we should only talk about Jesus. This, I think, a noble sentiment, especially, but of course not exclusively, if you are talking to clergy persons, which he was. He was also rather keen to tell us that if we think worship is boring or goes on too long, then we should wait until we are in heaven, because in heaven the only thing to do is worship God. The Archbishop pointed out that in the Book of Revelation, among other places, we are quite clearly told that from the throne of heaven came a voice saying, Praise our God, all you his servants, worship God. The suggestion is that we were created to worship God always, forever, eternally, so this is what we will do in the heavenly realm. Now, this might mess up your hope of what a heavenly paradise should look like, sat by the pool, sipping a pina colada in your budgie smugglers, for instance. And the problem when you only have 500 words, which is clearly not an eternity, is how to succinctly and pragmatically express that future destiny of humankind, eternity in heaven, eternally worshipping God. Well, actually, this is far easier than you might think, and it is not at all boring. And I refer you to my first sentence, Jesus. That's right, there is nothing more fantastic, amazing, and brilliant than the gift God gave to us first, Jesus Christ. Now, I realise that some of you reading this might not believe me when I say Jesus is fantastic and brilliant, which of course I affirm he is. But even if you do not worship God, you probably are likely already to be in a cycle of some sort of worship, whether you realise it or not. If it is not the righteous and spiritual, then it might possibly be a consumerist cultural God. Television, celebrity, money, success, power, or shopping, for instance. This does not make you a bad person, but it does mean you are missing the point of being alive. Fulfillment is not an achievable consumerist goal, but it is a spiritual outcome. Worship of God is the inoculation against all the transitory garbage we are peddled in our everyday lives. It helps us to focus on what is really important in the world: justice, equality, spiritual love, and mutual respect. Worshipping God is a life-giving and life-affirming. Living in this world does not mean that you are not able to taste the joys of God's love today either, but one does have to do something about it, and that something is worship God. Renewal of focus of priorities and joy of being alive starts with knowing Jesus Christ. Give him a go. He never fails. And that was written by Reverend Graham Bowkett.
Letters to the editors next. There are 10 letters this week, and I have the first this week. It's headed "The Watercress Line Seeks Votes," and it's from Gethin Jones. "Sir, the Watercress Line in Alresford needs your reader's support to help it win the National Lottery Awards 2015. The Mind the Gap project at the Mid-Hants Railway is up against 6 finalists for the Best Heritage Report project, the only entrant from Hampshire in this category, competing for a £2,000 prize and the chance to feature on a BBC The One show in September. The project aims to preserve the railway by providing 14 young people with 2-year apprenticeships in engineering and carpentry. Without these apprenticeships, the skills required to maintain the engines and carriages would be lost, as would the important asset that is the Watercress Line. The awards celebrate and recognise the inspirational and life-changing impact of National Lottery-funded projects. Voting closes at midnight on Wednesday, July the 29th. To go to www.lotterygoodcauses.org.uk/awards. I'm going to give you that address again. It's lotterygoodcauses.org.uk/awards. And that was from Gethin Jones of the National Lottery Awards Ambassador. The next letter, please, is from Richard. And can you start it off with the 9 letters?
And Councillor Gottlieb asks, who's in control? Sir, I've been asked why the judicial review decision in January didn't ensure the end of Henderson's effort to develop Silver Hill. You have to tackle each battle as it comes, but even before the judicial review, we knew that it was technically possible for Henderson to go back to the 2009 scheme. However, given that both Henderson and the City Council said it wasn't financially viable, and given that the court confirmed that the 2009 scheme stemmed from an unlawful action, we did not believe that the Council would have the effrontery to allow that to happen. Allowing it to happen is the right description, because as from June the 1st, the Council has had the opportunity to terminate the contract with Henderson, it still does, but it has never given the possibility the slightest thought. Instead, it has done all it can to keep Henderson's interests intact. Given how the judge criticised the Council for being in serious breach of procurement regulations, both in 2014 and in 2004, this is extraordinary behaviour. The Council's decision on Wednesday to make the position with Henderson irreversible was followed on Friday by the separate event of the Secretary of State deciding not to call in the 2014 application. This will perplex the Council, as although the judicial review will prevent them allowing Henderson to revert back to the 2014 scheme, both parties will no doubt be working out how they can inch their way back to it. In this context, the bus station, the affordable housing and pretty much everything will be up for grabs, the sole driver being Henderson's best interests, because by then the Council will have effectively lost all control. The Winchester Deserves Better campaign will continue, most likely in the form of another legal action, because if there's one thing Winchester doesn't deserve, it's a council that disregards the High Court as easily as it disregards its residents. Besides which, they said it's built, it ain't built. That's Councillor Gottlieb, City Councillor, Avington, Alresford.
This letter from Elizabeth Crawley is also about Silver Hill. It seems to me beyond belief that in a few years the Broadway and city centre will be dominated by 2 or more 7-storey massive tower blocks. This is twice the height and more of the general roofline of buildings in this area, truly. Thus, many decades of careful planning in what is surely a conservation area will be set at naught. I believe hundreds of thousands of visitors now come here to enjoy the open space of the outer and inner close, the magnificence and treasures of the cathedral, and the relatively peaceful central historical streets. Your paper on July the 9th has alerted its readers and others to the existence of a now far more sensitive and suitable plan for the development of Silver Hill. Unless action by the City Council is taken swiftly, the battle to save Winchester, which does deserve better, will indeed be lost. Elizabeth Crawley, St. Swithin Street, Winchester.
This letter from Frank Williams is headed Elitist Drivel. Tetcher Jones' wonderfully snooty letter, chronicled July the 9th, cheered me up no end after a lacklustre hat fair. I have not laughed so much since Sir Thomas Beecham defined a gentleman as someone who can play the piano accordion and doesn't. Perhaps Mr. and Mrs. Jones should heed Stephen Goodwin's wise words, on intolerance, letters July the 9th, and give thanks that, be it the subject transport modes, musical styles, or any other issue, even the most deluded snobs are allowed to spout their pompous drivel in these columns. What fun! Furthermore, I must point out that Colin, the dismal, well, not that bad trumpeter, in his other role as a music teacher, has, over the years, encouraged many young, aspiring pianists to develop their technique. And finally, since Mr. Jones' elitist bubble is so easily punctured, the next time I encounter a third-rate singing guitarist taking up a busking pitch, I may be tempted to direct him to the leafy lanes of Ossulbury, where he may give his most discordant rendition of Bob Dylan's Ballad of a Thin Man, which includes the refrain, "Something is happening here, and you don't know what it is, do you, Mr. Jones?" Frank Williams, Street Accordionist, Morstead Road, Bar End, Winchester.
And this from Keith Webb, headed Bridge the Gap. Sir, it's not every day that a lay person upsets not one, but apparently three bishops. After attending church at St. Andrew's, Chilcombe, on July the 12th, as invited, I picked up a two-page letter signed by our three diocesan bishops. It was addressed to Dear Friends. On reading it, I found it so incomprehensible, because of the language used, that very evening I emailed Bishop Tim Dakin, whose email address appeared in the letter. To my considerable surprise, and to his great credit, the bishop telephoned me to respond. He spoke at some length. He wanted to ascertain what specifically I had not understood. I argued that it was the overall message that had not come over to me, and suggested that it would also probably not be understood by the general public. I was told that the letter was only for churchgoers. This I found somewhat disingenuous. There seems to me little intellectual difference between those who attend church and those who do not. I believe that anyone writing a letter should always ensure that it is written in such a way and using language that it can be easily understood by the intended recipients. It was also a bit much expecting readers to punch in 83 characters in Google to download the concise, 10-page, diocesan annual report, and would probably put off many older churchgoers who may not even have computers. The Anglican Church has for many years now been suffering from reducing attendances and even, it seems, in the numbers of those training to become priests. In my view, the Church should face up to all this, cease squabbling in public over such issues as female bishops and gay marriage, and concentrate instead on communicating the Christian message in simple language so that even the least literate of us can understand. We live in a cathedral city, but there seems to be a huge and widening gulf existing between the close and the rest of Winchester. Webb Quarry Road, Winchester.
This letter, entitled Justice at Last, comes from Emily Glanfield. Having just graduated from university, I've had first-hand experience of the extremely unfair loan system. When I first applied for my loan, I thought that the amount they had loaned me, approximately $3,500, was a mistake because it covered just about half of my hall's accommodation. I rang Student Finance, who informed me that this was the correct amount due to my parents' income. Why, as an adult, am I being judged on their income? Luckily, my parents were willing to subsidise my living costs, amounting to an extra $4,500 per year, purely to cover the rest of my accommodation and food. Anything else, like going out and gym memberships, I worked to be able to afford. I knew people who were given a higher loan and an extra £4,000 in grants, as their parents had a lower income. They were able to go shopping and party away the extra cash. When I spent my weekends working behind a bar at minimum wage, I often thought about the students who were given £4,000 for nothing. However, I still consider myself lucky. If my parents had told me that they'd been unwilling to support me, I would not have been able to go. As a result of their income, I would not have had access to more loans, like students with a lower parental income. Why, because of my parents' income, should I possibly not have had the opportunity to attend university? Although I finished that the decision that everyone will be given access to as much loan as they need, and that the extortionately unfair grants will now become loans, has come as a welcome change. This will not by any means punish the poorest, because it is not the poorest who suffered from the original system. Only the very rich or the very poor were able to comfortably afford university. Now everybody will access the same loans, and all graduates will pay back their loans, as all will graduate in the same boat, ready to work and earn money, regardless of parental income. After all, it's us who will be paying this back, not our parents. Emily Glanfield, Orchard Close, Alsford.
This letter is headed No Green Values and has come from Jock MacDonald. Did Bill Gorham have a preview of the Chancellor's budget when he or she wrote his or her article for the Chronicle on July the 9th? There was just a whiff of a sneer from somewhere else in his or her note that two supermarkets had downgraded their green policies. Of course, the Chancellor had many problems on his mind, one or two of which he dealt with well, but that did not put him off delivering an attack on green values. Sustainable energy? Forget it. Better energy performance in new homes? Forget it. Cleaner cars? Forget them. Fracking? Yes. More roads? Yes. Etc., etc. Before the election, the Prime Minister had an agreement with other party leaders about the great importance of dealing with climate change. Clearly the master, as Nietzsche might have said, has lost control of his scheming emissary. Either that, or he is duplicitous. In this crucial year for dealing with climate change, Osborne's budget is going to make the next 50 far more difficult. It is all short term. But who does really care about our grandchildren? Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And this from M. Fisher. Surface is ruined. Read the old Meon Valley railway track. The ironic and sad truth is that the perfect surface is already there, lying directly beneath our feet. The original railway bed of gravel was revealed when the surface mud was removed, and for a short time, before the chipping went down, this was a brilliant surface. Firm, free draining, and it appeared to suit all. The layer of large chippings laid on this surface has nowhere to bed into and remains a hazard for many users. A proper survey should have brought this to light. As it is, not only has the surface been ruined, but a huge amount of money has been wasted putting down unnecessary chippings. The recent layer of grit put down on top of the worst areas of chippings has softened the surface for the moment. But we'll have to see how much of the chippings come through after rain. M. Fisher, Brockbridge, Droxford.
This letter from Katrina Ward. Having just seen the plans for the police HQ site in Winchester, I was really shocked. After looking at Bargate in St. Cross, I thought I would see some rather nice development like that. But no, this can only be described as yet another eyesore. At least the original building had a smaller footprint and space around it with trees. This looks more like a prison block. Brick-built squares, probably made out of ticky-tacky. Would you really like to live there, let alone look at them? Surely in such an area as Romsey Road, if we must have more houses, make them a little less dull and dense. Please, everyone, look at the plans and be very disappointed by them. Katrina Ward, Walton Place, Stanmore, Winchester.
This letter is headed Concrete Lifespan and is written by Kate McIntosh. At the special cabinet meeting on Monday, July 13th, a member asked about the necessity for the closure of the Friars Gate car park and whether this was due to lack of proper maintenance. They were informed by an officer that a concrete structure has a normal maximum lifespan of about 40 years. This is clearly untrue. The Barbican Estate, City of London, and the National Theatre were both completed in the early 1970s, and both are now listed and in very good nick. The Pantheon in Rome has a mass concrete dome and was built in the time of Hadrian. Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
Thank you all very much. Now, if you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or you can email them at news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase. news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. UK. Or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, staying with the opinions of the public, the Chronicle's Your Say column this week talks about the fact that the cruise liner QM2 is the first to be a pet friendly ship. And what did the public have to say about that, Claire?
Well, Joe Bilecki, who's 22, senior sales assistant of Walpole Road, Stanmore, Winchester, said, "No, you don't want to look after them when you're on holiday. You're supposed to be on holiday, and you don't want to worry about them." Brenda Henderson Thin, who's 77 and retired of Northlands Drive, Winchester, said, "No, I don't have any pets. I wouldn't take one with me. I never have taken them on holiday, so I don't think I would." Abby White, who's 26, a business owner of Clifton Road, Winchester, said, "Yes, we have an antisocial cat, and I would definitely take it on a cruise. It would be really funny. I think it's a good idea." Keith Bubba Reynolds, who's 49, tattoo artist of Stuart Crescent, Stanmore, "I've got a lizard, so probably not. Another lizard and two chickens. I'm too punk rock for a cruise."
And I've got editorial comments. And this week it says it's time to cull the non-jobs at the castle. Several months ago, this newspaper revealed that Hampshire County Council was paying millions of pounds to consultants to come up with ideas for saving money. Now, we report it is hiring its own internal department of consultants to work with Deloitte. Meanwhile, services are being cut. Buses, libraries, social care. This is the nature of bureaucracies, all bureaucracies, not just those in local government. They automatically and without thinking put the interests of themselves first and often lose sight of their purpose. The county council has become bloated and now becomes even more bloated to find out ways that it can become less bloated. Here's one answer. Cull these non-jobs. And it's first person now. And it's a lively discourse on the subject of Winchester City Council. And yes, the Silver Hill development. Jerry, please.
Now there's a surprise. It's headed No Courage to Admit a Mistake and is by Joanna Lewis. During last week's Winchester City Council meetings on Silver Hill, you were more likely to see an outbreak of mass twerking than a rational decision. By 41 votes to 10, it was decided not to end an 11-year-old development agreement with a global property investment fund who have led them a right merry dance. A terrible outbreak of temporary memory loss seemed to envelop the proceedings. They did not remember that the 2009 scheme they just approved has been declared unviable, and that their actions were judged unlawful in the High Court earlier this year. They were so confused, they carried on accepting advice from their experts, whose mistakes and poor judgment have got us in this mess in the first place. Instead, a delusioned council continued to believe that they have personal expertise in large-scale urban development projects. Meanwhile, they forgot we now have the internet and that large shopping centres passed their sell-by date in the 1990s. They forgot we live in a historic city and the plans to build on a floodplain and underground streams. These plans threaten ancient remains and vital drainage systems. They forget there's been no completed archaeology evaluation strategy and research framework, that seemingly no structural engineer has been engaged. Most of all, they forgot they serve the people and that their role is to protect the city. These poor councillors are vulnerable to the influence of those who prey on the weak and naive. Easily confused, they are easily led. Maybe they went up to London in a minibus and overdid the Mexican Pringles. Did the bright lights in the city, the tall, glass-fronted Henderson HQ or unisex toilets bedazzle them? It's even harder to understand their recklessness in the light of recent interventions. Computer-generated images have emerged depicting more accurately what the scheme will look like. Dark, towering brick walls, running the length of two football pitches, blocking the sun, will make visitors think they've driven into the back of the prison or Reading Town Centre. Local architects have designed alternative plans with open spaces for a marketplace and streets reflecting the city's charm and character. Save English Heritage has also launched a global online petition demanding government intervention. The preservation of our beautiful cathedral city centre is of national importance. Last week presented an opportunity to terminate the scheme without financial penalties because the developer had missed a deadline. They could start afresh and comply with the law. A competitive tendering process, the law of this land, will produce a new scheme on the best terms available, designed by local architects. Unfortunately, the relationship between the council and the Global Property Investment Fund is as snug as a sumo wrestler's underpants. Yet Henderson is like a giant basking shark waiting to suck up prime city centre assets. It has a history of buying up town centres and buildings in a job lot and then selling them off. Smash and grab profit-making for shareholders. It's a toxic brand, the object of a massive campaign in London to stop it replacing Smithfield Market with offices. Yet our council can't see it's being led by the nose into the knacker's yard. I've worked in some mad places in my time, but always in an environment where rational argument and facts eventually prevail. As one friend who's lived in Hampshire all her life texted me in disbelief, How did we get this lot? How indeed? The government must intervene, as it did with Smithfield. The next day, thinking about poor Winchester, I drove into the back of a parked car, causing hundreds of pounds of damage. That cost and damage is, of course, nothing compared to what our vulnerable city is going to bear. What cost indeed, just because they do not have the courage to admit to being wrong.
And Hampshire Chronicle's alternative view of the news, Belgarum, is next. It begins with an item about a horse-drawn carriage from Richard.
Yes, and it's headed, "Horns are halted for horse-drawn carriage." This is certainly one way to tackle Winchester's air pollution crisis. A group of people, a dog and a cat, being led up St George's Street by horse-drawn carriage on Saturday. Our long-faced friends are seen occasionally in the city centre, but rarely do four beautiful specimens pass the Chronicle offices. Even more perplexing was the fact that Winchester usually horn-happy motorists kept quiet. This carriage moved faster than many on country roads, but still caused minor tailbacks around Upper Brook Street and Friars Gate. And there's a photograph of four splendid-looking animals pulling a carriage, indeed, up George Street.
Boarding is a bit garish for our cathedral. Stand in Cathedral Close and you share the view of thousands who have visited over the centuries. Its backdrop has barely changed since Mary Tudor married Philip of Spain in 1554. But this pleasing sight has recently been breached by a large hoarding advertising the cathedral's £20.5 million restoration. Belgarum is a firm supporter of the cathedral and has dropped a few coins in the bucket already. But while conservation is welcome, does it need quite such garish self-promotion?
And goodness me, Belgarum is even dealing with Silver Hill. Silver Hill manhole mystery. After all these years, the Silver Hill project has begun with a manhole. This cornerstone of the multi-million pound development was installed in late May, allowing developer TH Real Estate to say it had begun work by June the 1st deadline. Unfortunately, few seem to know where it is. It emerged at council meetings this month that the cover is somewhere near Friars Gate Surgery. The installation caused a stir with Silver Hill's critics, who tried to block the scheme's progress by claiming the developer had put it in before completing key reports and archaeological work. Leading campaigner Kim Gottlieb also claims to have been less than impressed by the manhole's size on his visit. Residents have reported sightings of the elusive metal cover in various locations, but Winchester City Council has ruled out spots suggested by the Chronicle. Its spokesman had yet to confirm the real location at the time of going to press. Like the crop circles which appeared around Winchester in the early 1990s, this mystery could send us all down the rabbit hole.
Oh, well, follow that. And to follow that, we have historical items. And I start with 200 years ago. And I'm so pleased to tell you that this is 200 years ago and not recently. It's on July the 24th, 1815. One of those scenes which occasionally disgrace even Smithfield took place there about 5 o'clock on Friday evening. Namely, a man exposing his wife for sale. Hitherto, we have only seen these moving in the lowest classes of society, thus degrading themselves, but the present exhibition was attended with some novel circumstances. The parties, buyer and seller, were persons of property. They were persons of property. The female, the object of the sale, young, beautiful, and elegantly dressed, was brought to the market in a coach and exposed to the view of her purchaser with a silk halter around her shoulders. The purchaser is a celebrated horse dealer in town, and the seller a grazier of cattle.
100 years ago, July the 24th, 1915. At the moment of writing, in many homes in the city, folk are awaiting further details from the Persian Gulf, where, from the dispatches published officially yesterday, it is now beyond doubt that the Winchester Territorial Battalion, or such portion of it which has not returned to India, are in action. This is confirmed by the fact that this morning's casualty list contains the names of no less than 9 officers killed, belonging to regiments in the same division. It is exactly a year ago today that the battalion left the city for its annual training, and they've been abroad 9 months out of the 12. And the second item, also dealing with war work. 3 months have now elapsed since the Winchester Hospital Supply Depot was started. The depot was started in the middle of April by a small committee of ladies for the purpose of helping to supply hospitals at the front with various surgical dressings, etc., which are in such great demand at the present time. A weekly consignment of articles is dispatched alternately to the French Emergency Fund and to one of our own hospitals, either at the Dardanelles or the Western Front, and many grateful letters of thanks have been received from the recipients of these gifts.
And I have two items from 50 years ago, July the 24th, 1965. A 20-page document representing 4 years' work by Hampshire County Council officials and 3 leading members received the Council's overwhelming approval at Winchester on Monday. It was the Council's statement to be forwarded to the Boundary Commission, representing a radical approach to the problem of the population explosion in Hampshire. A specially convened meeting of the Council gave its support to the document, which, if accepted by the Commission, will mean that the Commission will make representations to the Minister of Housing and Local Government to constitute a special review area under the 1958 Local Government Act. And secondly, it was again emphasised at a meeting of Hampshire Education Committee, Southern District Youth Employment Service Subcommittee in Eastleigh Technical College on Friday of last week that the employment position for young people in the district had never been better, and there appeared to be no immediate prospect of any significant change. In his report for the period February the 1st to May the 31st, the Youth Employment Officer said that perhaps the most notable feature was the low number of Easter school leavers. Only 330 young people left school, which was a little more than 20% of the estimated total number of leavers for the year.
25 years ago, July the 20th, 1990. The number of people to have contracted AIDS in the Wessex region has doubled over the past year from 102 to 201. And the same applies to those who have acquired the infection by sharing infected needles. Their numbers have risen from 61 to 117. It is possible that in a few years' time, over half the UK cases of AIDS could be in the heterosexual contact and injections drug abuse categories, according to the Department of Health, which has just released the latest national figures on HIV infection and AIDS. In the Wessex region, there have been at least 75 cases of full-blown AIDS, of whom 48 have died. And the second article, farmers in the southeast have pledged to continue the battle for the introduction of a compulsory registration scheme for dogs. They call on the government to accept that parliamentary and public opinion favours dog registration and to initiate discussions on the precise form of a scheme without delay. The decisive vote by the House of Lords, which came out in favour of a registration scheme, must mark the end of government pussyfooting on the whole question of dog control, says Sean Levy, Regional Director.
We're going to move on now to what's on. And we've had the regular features, so we're going to move on to what's around in the region for the next couple of weeks. We'll start off with talks and meetings. Saturday, August the 1st, the Great Waste Repair Cafe at Winchester Discovery Centre, 10 o'clock until 12:30. And you can get such items as clothes, furniture, electrical items, bicycles, crockery, appliances and toys mended, and learn how to do it yourself next time. There is computer advice on hand as well. It's free. You just drop in. And that's the Discovery Centre from 10 until 12:30 p.m. on Saturday, August the 1st. Exhibitions up until the September the 30th, it's entitled With the Rifles to Waterloo, the Royal Green Jackets Rifles Museum, Peninsula Barracks in Romsey Road, Winchester. Wellington's Defeat of Napoleon, 25 square metre model of the battlefield with 30,000 soldiers and horses. The entry fees are adults £4, concessions for seniors, children's and group. And that's to Wednesday, September the 30th at the Royal Green Jackets Museum in Romsey Road. Open gardens, we've one to tell you about this week on Thursday, the July the 30th. Hill House, Old Alsford, traditional English two-acre garden with huge multicoloured herbaceous border, impressive dahlia bed, butterfly-attracting sunken garden, prolific kitchen garden, hens and bantams. Admission is £3.50 and it's from 1:30 to 5 p.m. There will be plants for sale and teas. That's on Thursday, July the 30th, Hill House at Old Alsford. Winchester Theatre Royal offers three items, and I'll tell you all three. It's Courtney Pine featuring Zoe Rahman on Tuesday the 6th of October at 7:30. Plenty of time to book for that. In fact, they're all ahead of time. The Blues Band, if you're interested in that music, is on Saturday the 31st of October at 8 o'clock. And Ralph McTell is coming to Winchester Theatre Royal on Wednesday, the 11th of November at 7:30. So the box office number for those is 01962 840440, 01962 840440. That's Courtney Pine on the 6th of October, the Blues Band on the 31st of October, and Ralph McTell on 11th of November. The last item is about new bus routes, and these are of interest to many people who are finding bus routes diminishing in the area. But they're set up for the rest of the summer, and it starts with new bus routes have opened across central Hampshire, but it will only be until the end of the summer. The South Downs Rambler will run from Winchester to Petersfield mainly along the A272 until the 31st of October. An additional M3 stagecoach service from the centre of Winchester to the Winchester Science Centre and Marwell Zoo will run on Wednesdays throughout the holidays and on Saturdays until September the 26th. Travellers who pay the fare will receive a 10% discount to the zoo. The Weekender service, which also runs throughout July and August, runs on Saturdays, Sundays and bank holidays, and loops from Petersfield, Liss and Alton railway stations to Uparc House, Gilbert White's Museum and Jane Austen's House Museum. The County Council and the South Downs National Park have developed the routes to support tourism in the South Downs National Park. Alison Thorpe, Strategy Lead for Access and Recreation at the South Downs National Park, said the South Downs had so much to offer. Glorious landscapes, wildlife and history. But if you're focusing on traffic to get the attractions, you'll miss the spectacular views. Last year we had a good response to additional weekend services, even receiving thank you letters from residents previously cut off without public transport for one day every week. This year we're going to be encouraging more visitors and tourists to get on board, leaving their cars behind. Councillor James Burns, City Council portfolio holder for the local economy, said, Winchester City Council's five-year destination management plan for the area cites a request to create more frequent public transport links to rural areas and the South Downs National Park. And the Visit Winchester team have committed to addressing this in the action plan. Before we move on to the general news, here are the lighting up times starting on Saturday, July the 25th. The sun will set at 9:03 p.m. and on Wednesday, 29th of July, the sun will rise at 5:26 a.m. with lighting up on that day at 8:57 p.m. And those are your lighting up times from us this week.
Solar panels power farm operated by Stores Giant. A farm near Winchester supplying a major British retailer has cut its energy bills and carbon emissions by installing solar panels. The 4,000-acre Leckford estate, owned by Waitrose, will power its milking parlour and lighting through the new rooftop system. The farm near Stockbridge supplies Waitrose with milk, poultry, mushrooms and cider. The energy produced is enough to annually power 40 homes, saving 71,000 kilograms of carbon emissions a year. Hive Energy designed the panels and has used the government's feed-in tariff to install them for free. Andrew Hode of the Leckford Estate said, Waitrose has made a firm commitment to reduce its carbon emissions and installing solar panels at the farm is one way in which we're trying to do this. Hive Energy said the scheme was good for the environment and good for business.
Changes at Melbury Lodge after deathfall. Health officials have been forced to make changes following the death of a mentally ill man who jumped from the roof of a Winchester multi-storey car park. As previously reported, Carl Lewis was found by passing medical staff at the entrance of the education centre of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on April the 16th last year. The 42-year-old, who was a patient at Melbury Lodge, was rushed to A&E but died from multiple skull fractures a short while later. During the inquest held in Winchester, the jury was told how Mr. Lewis was technically not permitted out of the clinic the day he plummeted to his death because he'd refused to take medication for his paranoid schizophrenia. A spokesman for the Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust has said Mr. Lewis's death has resulted in a number of key changes at Melbury Court Lodge, including ensuring the correct paperwork is completed prior to any patient leaving, a vital piece of evidence which came to the light during the hearing. Dr. Guy Powell, consultant psychiatrist at Melbury Lodge, told the hearing technically he should never have been allowed out of the hospital. He'd been going out of the hospital on regular occasions. It would have been unreasonable to stop him from going out. We cannot gratuitously deny people liberty. The Southern Health spokesman added, following the conclusion, our thoughts continue to be with the family and friends of Mr. Lewis at this difficult time. We'd been working with Mr. Lewis for a number of years and he was well known to many of our staff. Mr. Lewis would often present to our teams informally when he felt he couldn't manage his condition, and our staff were familiar with his routines and often tried to accommodate these as part of his recovery. It's vital that our organisation learns from this incident. As a result of this case, we've already put in place a number of key changes, which include a new system in place to ensure the correct paperwork is completed and sign-off has taken place before any patient is granted leave, and improvements to paperwork, which include larger areas for clinicians to record more detailed information about a patient's mental state for leave requests, and the colour coding of specific forms to enable staff to access key information more efficiently. With hindsight, it is clear these improvements would not have prevented the tragic outcome. Mr. Lewis was not behaving in a way that would cause concern from the professionals supporting him, and following an assessment would very likely have been granted leave, which is a regular part of his routine and important to his recovery.
Loving husband and father dies. Ian Kingdom, the well-known Winchester businessman, has died a few days short of his 82nd birthday. He was visiting friends in Switzerland when he was taken ill and died in hospital in Zurich. Born in Winchester in July 1933, Ian was educated at Peter Simmons Grammar School, after which he did national service and was commissioned in the Royal Signals, serving mostly in the Hook of Holland. After this, he joined the family firm of T.M. Kingdon and Sons Hardware, with branches in Winchester, Basingstoke and Alton. Established in 1853, the firm was an integral part of the High Street for over 100 years. Such was the importance of the firm that it became a major component of the Milestones Museum in Basingstoke, alongside other Hampshire giants such as Taskers, Thornycroft and the AA Collection. In 1966, Ian won a Winston Churchill scholarship and elected to spend it in the United States, studying retail methods, returning to modernise the business. He was an active member of the British Hardware Federation and was honorary treasurer for many years. His involvement in local fairs included a year as the chairman of the Round Table, a founding member of the Twyford Singers, a trustee of the St. John's Charity, and a leading member of the Winchester Wine Appreciation Society. He was a stalwart of the Hampshire Club, later founding the Winchester Luncheon Club in the Peninsula Barracks, home of the Gurkha Welfare Trust, of which he was a great supporter. Ian was an excellent pianist, but above all, he was a formidable wordsmith with a wonderful sense of humour. Erudite and amusing, he will be remembered as a brilliant speaker. Ian and his wife Jane were married in 1962 and lived all their married lives in Winchester. They had 3 children, Matthew, Melissa and Zoe, and their 6 grandchildren were a great source of joy for Ian, who will be very much missed by them and by all his numerous friends and colleagues.
Electoral divisions. Residents and organisations can have their say on their county councillor's patch. The government is calling for people to have an input as they produce a new pattern of electoral divisions. It comes as the Electoral Commission plans to move boundaries for Hampshire's 78 county councillors. Max Caller, chairman of the commission, said, "We are asking local people and organisations to help us draw up a new pattern of electoral divisions for the whole county. We want to hear local views on where people think the focal point of their community is and where the natural boundaries between communities might lie. As we draw new boundaries, we will try to ensure that each county councillor represents roughly the same number of voters. We also aim to produce a pattern of divisions that reflects the interests and identities of communities. The consultation will end on August the 3rd.
Protester found hanged in cell. A campaigner for equal rights between parents has died in hospital after he was found hanged in a prison cell. Hayden Burton was discovered by prison officers at Winchester Jail at around 10 a.m. last Wednesday and rushed by ambulance across Romsey Road to the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, where he died on Saturday. The Central Hampshire coroner, Graham Short, had been informed and an inquest was due to be opened. Mr. Burton, formerly of Wolf Close Stanmore, was being held on remand at the prison facing an allegation of assault. He was also due to be sentenced at Crown Court for possession of an offensive weapon, criminal damage to a police cell and breach of a criminal behaviour order. The 42-year-old had become a well-known figure in Winchester city centre in recent months, protesting with a loud hailer at the corner of Upper Brook Street and St George's Street in a Superman costume. He was involved with New Fathers for Justice, campaigning to highlight children's rights and alleged wrongdoing by secret family courts. He also staged demonstrations outside Southampton Civic Centre, at a general election, Hustings in Jury Street, and in Prime Minister David Cameron's constituency, Witney. A prison service spokesman said HMP Winchester prisoner Hayden Burton was pronounced dead at approximately 5:25 a.m. on Saturday, July the 18th, at an outside hospital. Next of kin have been notified. As with all deaths in custody, there will be an investigation by the Independent Prisons and Probations Ombudsman, he's added. The original Fathers for Justice has questioned support given to Mr. Burton by authorities. In an open letter to Winchester MP Steve Brine, the group asked what issues Mr. Burton had raised with him and why police were called to the hustings in the Hustings protest in May. Mr. Brine had not responded to the Chronicle's request for comment at the time of going to press. A statement from New Fathers for Justice said, "We're deeply shocked and saddened by this news. Putting vulnerable people in prison is, in part, further victimising people who are in most need."
County wine tastes success. 20 years ago, many wine connoisseurs would turn their noses up at English produce, but after years of heavy investment, coupled with stronger expertise, savvy business sense, and the right type of soil, Hampshire wines are on the up. Hampshire wine has grown from being a cottage industry to one worth tens of millions of pounds, with 38 vineyards operating in the county and more planted each year. The region helped the country to produce 6.3 million bottles last year, with sales of English wine predicted to make £100 million this year. Many of the county's vineyards produce sparkling wine, which in some tests is beating those from Champagne and Prosecco. Interest is so high that Hambledon Vineyard, England's oldest, is on course to produce 1 million bottles a year and is selling their English fizz on Virgin Atlantic flights. Its managing director, Ian Kellett, believes Hampshire will benefit in years to come. He said, "Hampshire is going to be England's wine county in the future because of the geology. It will take a long time, but Winchester will be the capital city of the country's wine, in my view." Caroline Stevens, sales and marketing manager at Danebury, said, "People are pleasantly surprised when they taste wines from the Stockbridge Vineyard. More and more people are contacting us now. Initially, I was contacting them. The word has got out. There are more Hampshire vineyards now. The quality is better." Three types of grape, Pinot Noir, Pinot Meunier, and Chardonnay, are grown in Hampshire, creating the high-quality sparkling wine the region is becoming famous for. A line of chalk through the country helps create the right soil conditions for producing sparkling wine. But while sparkling wines are faring well, vineyards find it hard to produce world-class still wines because of the soil and the weather. Even though it is cheaper to produce sparkling wine in this country than it is in Champagne, the news that there are so many vineyards is still surprising. But why is English wine still so expensive? Journalist Susie Barry said, "We have to change our mindset. We have to think of it as if we're buying a bottle of champagne. Just because it's on our doorstep doesn't mean it's going to be cheaper." In addition, other wine-producing nations, such as France and Australia, have more land and can produce so much more. Danebury describes itself as boutique and produces 15,000 to 20,000 bottles a year, while Hambledon Vineyard is still only producing 200,000 bottles a year. Roger Marchbank, secretary of the Wessex Vineyards Association, said Australian vineyard Jacobs Creek has a factory which makes Fawley Refinery look tiny. The ones in Hampshire are handmade. He added that some supermarkets are able to sell wine at a discount because they're mass-produced. "It's not expensive. It's the right price for what you're buying."
Hub plans for city grounds. Winchester City's football ground could become a community hub under the controversial housing scheme in Abbots Barton. Club officials say the Denplan City ground is underused and could welcome more teams, workshops and activities, with a new all-weather pitch. But it is tied to plans for 13 council houses on green space in Hillier Way, which many residents are resisting. Dave Malone, club director of football, said, "NIMBYism was to blame for opposition to new homes. The football ground is underused. It's a grass pitch that we can use twice a week. We let the girls play there two or three times a year, but we'd like them to play every week." Around 150 residents attended a consultation last week where the officers revealed how the estate could look. Silk Kramer, secretary of Abbots Barton Community Group, said, "There are many who voiced their concerns that they didn't want any houses in any of the green areas, which I understand. I don't really want them, but we need houses, so there has to be a compromise. The proposal represents an acceleration of the council's building programme, including schemes at Victoria House and Westman Road in Wick."
Wild birds still on loose. The hunt continues for a group of large birds which have been loose for a fortnight in the North Winchester countryside. Three of the six rhea, which broke out of a small holding in South Wanston, are still thought to be at large. The ostrich-like birds, native to the South American plains, have been known to attack humans, but this group is said by their owners to be afraid of people. Dog walker Gail Cook spotted a rhea looking wet and bedraggled in a cornfield near Stoke Charity on Saturday morning. And there's a photograph of this indeed very sad and bedraggled looking bird in the middle of a large field all on its own. "It was calm but flapped its wings a couple of times as my Jack Russell got close," she told the Chronicle. "It allowed me to follow it and even ate several pieces of bread I had with me, but it wouldn't let me close enough to slip the lead round its neck. As it was so calm, after about 20 minutes, I left it wandering in the field," she added. Residents have reported sightings of two birds near King Somborne, while another was allegedly seen eating peas in a field north of South Wanston on Monday. The bird's owner, Robert Memory, was unavailable for comment.
Nancy, 100, thanks helpers. Nancy had a lot of people to thank as she marked her 100th birthday. Even the chiropodist popped in. Nancy Phelan has lived in Winchester for 36 years, moving to sheltered housing at Matilda Place, Gordon Road, 6 years ago. The family, spanning 12 grandchildren and 14 great-grandchildren, threw the party last Thursday to celebrate the charities who've helped her, including the Salvation Army and Age Concern. Her daughter, Barbara Sprutenberg, said, "She's had a lot of support from wonderful organisations. We wanted to thank all of them for supporting her and making her so happy for these last 6 years." Mrs. Phelan married Dr. Joe Phelan in Sri Lanka in 1938. She has three surviving children, Barbara, Anne and David.
Accident inquest. An inquest has been opened into the death of a man killed in a car crash near Winchester. Police were called to near Crawley, between Stockbridge and Winchester, in the early hours of Saturday, July the 11th, where a car had overturned, killing the driver, Paul Chilton, 46, and seriously injuring a 21-year-old male passenger. Mr. Chilton of Beaches in Crawley, who worked at the Fox and Hounds in the village, was pronounced dead at the scene, while his companion was taken to Southampton General Hospital after the silver BMW 3 Series was found in a field off New Barn Road. The passenger is believed to have been released from hospital. The inquest, which heard the cause of death was multiple injuries, resumes on November the 2nd. The main road through Crawley was closed throughout the morning of the crash while police carried out an investigation.
Persistent thief. A relentless Winchester shoplifter has been jailed after magistrates ran out of patience with him. Christopher Peake, 34, of Sussex Street, admitted stealing deodorant and shaving products from Boots and a 2-kilo tub of protein powder worth $64.99 from Holland and Barrett, both stores on the High Street. magistrates at Basingstoke ordered he pay £64.99 compensation, an £80 victim surcharge and a £150 criminal court charge. They jailed him for 6 weeks because of his relentless and persistent offending. Only a few days earlier, at the same court, he'd been fined £75 after admitted stealing a box of biscuits valued at £6.25. Magistrates also ordered he pay £20 costs and a £180 criminal court charge.
Farmland left scorched after two fires. Firefighters tackled fire on a farmland which scorched a large area of stubble. Crews attended in the Chilcombe area, southeast of Winchester. About 3 hectares and a hedge were damaged in a blaze caused by a combine harvester catching fire. The combine was not severely damaged after the driver used an extinguisher, but the flames spread to the recently harvested stubble on Telegraph Hill next to the A272. 19 firefighters from Winchester, Alsford, Eastleigh and Bishop's Waltham used 3 hoses and a water carrier to extinguish the flames, which started at 1:30 p.m. on Sunday and lasted 2 hours. Crew manager Dan Jocelyn of Winchester Fire Station said, "Well, luckily the wind was blowing the fire towards a hedge. If it had been blowing up the hill, we would not have been able to stop it." And at 4:55 p.m, crews were called to a fire at Barton Stacey involving 20 hectares.
Thank you, everyone. And that concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. Please remember that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. And we thank again our editors, Gordon and Liz, and the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And many thanks to our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Richard.
Goodbye.
Thank you for joining us. And Jerry.
Bye.
And from me, Roz. Goodbye. Would you please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you for listening and have a good week.